The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. John. On the evening of that first day of the week, even though the disciples had locked the doors of the place where they were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood before them. "Peace be with you," he said. And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. At the sight of the Lord, the disciples rejoiced. "Peace be with you," he said again. "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." And then he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive people's faults, they are forgiven them. If you hold them bound, they are hell bound." It happened that one of the 12, Thomas, was absent when Jesus came, and the other disciples kept telling him, "We have seen the Lord." His answer was, "I'll never believe it without probing the nail prints in his hands, without putting my finger in the nail marks on my hand into his side." A week later, the disciples were once more in the room, and this time Thomas was with them, and despite the locked doors, Jesus came and stood in their midst. "Peace be with you," he said. And then to Thomas, "Take your finger and examine my hands. Put your hand into my side. Do not persist in your unbelief, but believe." And Thomas said to him in response, "My Lord and my God." Jesus then said to him, "You became a believer because you saw me. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe." Jesus performed many other signs as well, signs not recorded here in the presence of his disciples, but these have been recorded to help you believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, so that through this faith you may have life in his name. The Gospel of the Lord. Just wanted you to know we're praying with you all. Peggy Hamilton is one of the finest people I've ever known. Great, great, holy, wonderful woman. Just a pleasure knowing her. So for you, her grandchildren, her children. Everything she did with grace, and most especially this final period to the challenges that you all presented, that we all presented even, and that she was going to accept this cancer and that she knew exactly where she was going. There's no doubt where she was going. What a great faith. So how was your week? Convince me. Good, good. It's a great week. Following the Easter celebration and the Easter events, and we went on our annual priest retreat. Interesting experience. Some folks still getting over it. We had two Jesuits. Well, one who was a Jesuit for 27 years and then took himself a wife, and he still believes he's a Jesuit. But two brothers, both priests, Dennis, Lynn, and Matthew, his brother, and they do great work in giving retreats and conferences all around the world. They do a lot of work in South and Central America at the present time. They went off to learn Spanish because they said, hey, these people need to know this good news as well. Very interesting. Dennis left the priesthood after 27 years, and he's been married for 27 years, and he says, hey, great gifts in both of those realities. Good. But they've written about 24 books, and so much of their writing is centered around healing. How important is healing? We look at it even in the context of today's gospel, what healing needed to take place among the apostles. I remember reading one of their books, Healing Life's Hurts, back in the 80s, I guess. It was based on Erik Erikson's material, great psychologist and teacher and instructor, and he had those ways of coming to wholeness and health. And then they had other books where they deal a lot with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's theory, the five stages of growth when somebody is dying of terminal illness: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, and how people move through those stages. But they have books titled Healing Life's Hurts, Healing Memories, Healing the Past, Healing the Future, Healing the Future. That's an interesting one. What is going to come that we are not going to be able to take care of? Valid. Very good, valuable perspective. But one of my favorite books is Good Goats. Nice title, isn't it? So take off on Matthew 25. You know, where we're all familiar with the scene, the judgment scene, and the end of time, the king will come and sit on his royal throne, and he'll separate the sheep and the goats, and the sheep he will put on his right or his left, one or other. He'll put the sheep on one side and the goats on the other side, and hey, the sheep, man, they're coming on in, and the goats, man, they're on their way off to where we don't want to go. They have a good take on it. Their perspective, there's a lot of good goats. In it, they have one of my great and favorite images. I wrote about it in the bulletin, I guess, last year, and talked about it in a homily. It's the question and perspective. The subtitle of this book is Healing Our Image of God. How important that is. How do you image God? How do you see Him? What do you really believe? I mean, go deeper. Forget my head trip, you know, that tells me all the theological premises and perspectives. What do I really believe about this God? What do I believe about this? What does that mean in my life? Yeah, hope of resurrection, but what else? What else? How do you flesh that out? They started off the retreat with musical chairs. Can't you see that? The priests of our diocese playing musical chairs, you know? Many of them thought, man, these guys are nuts, you know? And they thought that themselves, that they might be, because they didn't know whether it would go over or not. But there was an interesting undercurrent in it. They went through it. And don't you know, Father Caskey won it, you know? Because he's the biggest bodied guy there anyway, right? And folks are not going to wrestle him for a chair. But then they said, now we change the rules. There was a great twist in it. They said, now we're going to play musical chairs, but there's no limit to the number of people that can sit on a chair. Very simple move. I wasn't there for it, but I got the full report because I had a funeral Tuesday in Greenwood, and so Father Noonan and I arrived in the afternoon, and they had moved through this stage. The twist was very significant. The twist is about a reality. We tend to live in an extraordinarily competitive world. We are constantly going against another or going against the others. What if we were all pulling together? What if we could all work out together and we weren't against the next one? And what if we were just seeing it broadly in that perspective? Then that's the way I need to read the gospel. Because there are parables in there that we constantly have difficulty with. You know the one about the payment to the laborers? You know that one that disturbs people quite often? Hey, why in the world did you give the same wage to them? Man, didn't you know I've been working in the heat of the day? What kind of God are you? Or the prodigal son? Hey, and the son that stayed at home. Son that stayed at home, he was more trouble than the one that went off and was a little rambunctious, probably. Why? Because he was seething with anger. Why? Because he never saw himself as a son. He was a servant of his father. He never knew what it was to be son to the father. And he's saying, no, that's your son out there. Why would I celebrate? It's my brother. Then we begin to understand those parables when we reverse those realities. Am I in competition or am I available to his graces? In Good Goats, the great image that they have is, how do you see God? Do you see God as your prosecuting attorney, or do you see him as your defense attorney? We talked about it before. It's a very valuable piece. I told them, hey, I love that image. Found it to be so extraordinarily helpful. Because so much of my life I lived from the perspective that God was my prosecuting attorney. And if I needed any help, my grandmother certainly helped me out because she reminded me he knew everything I was doing and he knew it even before I did it. So why in the heck not do it anyway? He knew it, right? And he was going to get me and, you know, hey, all of that tradition, we all have a huge amount of that. This is God now, the same God, there's only one. How do we reconcile those realities? How do you see God? How do you choose to see God? So we look at it in the context of the gospel. I think, what do you hear in that gospel? You remember? You know, the one about it was the first day of the week and he appeared to the disciples. Hey, locked doors and all that kind of thing for fear. Hey, man, he moves through locked doors. No problem. But we got to invite him. I've got lots of locked doors. But he's not going to force his way through them unless I invite him. So he appeared in their midst. What do you see? What do you see happening? What are the things that stand out? Tell me. Fear. Good one. Man, we do a great job on that, don't we? Really? Where in the world did we get such an idea that we had to drive our God by fear? Was it just that we were basically fearful that we wouldn't get it? Or were we afraid that God wasn't going to be able to manage it himself? Where in the world did we get it all? A great cycle of fear that would drive us. You got to be and you got to do. Hey, when my mother died and I was 7 years of age and I went to school and the sister said, well, God wanted your mother. And I said, well, I don't want that God. I couldn't tell my dad. I couldn't tell him at home. But I knew absolutely, unquestionably, I did not want to have that God. Who would? A vengeful, self-absorbed God. There is something wrong with that. Why do we tell people things that we have to untell them later? So what was happening? Thomas, do you see him? Wow, what a good one. You like him? Who likes him? My Lord, what's wrong with the rest? I think he's wonderful. But that's just me because, hey, I see myself like him too. I wonder if he went away because he was just absolutely broken up that things had fallen apart. You know, he had hooked his wagon to a star, to the Christ himself. And now, hey, he's dead. Did he fall into a funk or a depression because he thought, this is it? Possible. Did he want to just get away from the group and say, that's it, it's all over. This is the end. I do that sometimes. I get into that kind of a funk and stress and everything. Man, I don't want to talk to anyone. I just want to kind of work it through myself. Go away, get into the woods, get out of here, not talk. And you hang around, people say, what's wrong with you? What's wrong? Hey, just leave me alone, right? Am I the only one? No. Some of you know that, right? Poor old Thomas, hard time. So he appears out in the open again, and the apostles say, ha, we have seen the Lord. I always wonder when I read this passage, did they say, na, 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 we have seen the Lord. Hey, there's definitely some sense of it. Hey, we do it so often in life, it becomes kind of a second nature. Hey, what I have and you don't have, we learned it from the time we were so high. We don't get over it without significant effort. It says the disciples repeatedly said, would once have been okay? Maybe they were taunting him. Hey, even in American football, they throw a flag and say, hey, 15 yards back, you know. But in our lives and in our lifestyle, we can live comfortably with that. What I know more than you. Knowledge is pretty important. We got a lot of stake and a lot of stock in knowledge. So it's not surprising that we have these challenges and difficulties, because quite often I would trade faith for knowledge. Right? You're not going to commit, okay? Yes, I'll answer it. True. Because from my personal perspective, I would rather know so often than I would to trust. That was an issue at stake in the gospel. They wanted to know it all, and now they are faced with it, and Jesus is saying, no, no, hey, trust me, I got you covered. So he appears the second time, Thomas is there, immediately, hey, locked doors and all of that business, nah, no problem to my guide, if I invite him. No problem at all. He'll roll away any boulders or stones that keep me half dead. He will take care of me. And so he says immediately after appearing, he lands in. Thomas, what do you want? What do you want? He always asks people, even all the way along on his journey, what is it you want from me? Not imposing anything. What do you want from me? Hey, you want to touch my hands? Come on up here. You want to put your hand on my side? Come on. Whatever it is you want so that you can believe, that is who I am. That is who I am. We could read it as a condemnation or as a judgment, or we could choose to read it as a celebration. Jesus says, hey, whatever you want, Thomas, man. And blessed are all the people who have not seen me but yet believe. That's a great grace too. But Thomas, if this is what you need, come on and do it. Come on. And so Thomas moves through his turn, his experience. How does he image him? There's a great telltale piece about all the rest of them in the first section of the gospel. Remember, Jesus appears, and he says, peace be with you. What happened immediately afterwards? He showed them his hands and his side. That becomes a contentious issue now. He had done that with the rest of them, but Thomas said, hey, I'm not going to believe. Maybe they taunted him. Maybe he was forced into that kind of a perspective or position. You know, we never analyze those things greatly. It's much easier for us to just deal with things on a surface level. And so often, we treat God in the same way. I store up all of these theological perspectives. Well, that's God, and that's God, and that's God. Hey, there's only one. How do I bring them into perspective? Is God really my prosecuting attorney or my defense attorney? How does God come to my aid? Boy, he came to their aid pretty stoutly there. How do I image him? I went to visit my friend yesterday afternoon. He's a great man. He has cancer and he's had a lot of struggles. And his daughter, 47 years of age, died during the week. She had terrible struggles. She was addicted, and her mom, who died at 48, would go and get her, find her wherever she was, and bring her back and put her in treatment, and then she would lose again and be out and having difficulty, and hard, difficult life. He loved that girl, and as he sat talking about her, he said, you know, Michelle was the middle, and just loved her greatly. She was charming growing up, and even still going through all of this, she would give you the shirt off of her back. But it was a very hard life. Constantly, the quest and effort and struggle, often coming here and always seeking and finding, trying to find, but never having that peace. Question he was wondering about, of course, is the natural one that a parent would worry about. What's going to happen to her? Where does she go? Very important question. I learned this from good goats. I said, my friend, give me your hand. We're going to pray. I said, here's what I want you to do. We've been friends for a long time. I said, put your hand here. I want you to imagine this scene. You are sitting next to the throne of God himself. You are telling him about Michelle, your beloved daughter. I say, when you feel the experience, squeeze my hand and we'll go from there. And sure enough, he squeezed my hand. And I said, now, tell God what you want to say about her. I love her. I think I might be to blame some. People told me along the way that I was to blame some because I enabled her. Said, probably didn't. We say that. But it's very possible you didn't, that you were just trying to love her. And again you went back and tried to provide her some support, and you constantly hoped against hope that she would be okay. And I said, now, what would you like to say to her? He said, I love you. I love you, I love you, I love you. And I said, what do you want to do now? He said, I said, here she is now. She appears before you and God, the throne of God. You see her coming on in. What is it you want to say? I love her. So what do you want to do? I just want to put my arms around her and hug her. And I said, go to it. Now what do you see God doing? I see God getting up out of his throne and coming and hugging her. And saying, welcome, Michelle. What a hard life you've had. Come inherit. Receive the peace. Come into the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. It was very healing. How do we image him? Makes a huge difference. Makes a huge difference in what I believe and what I trust and what I experience. What do I believe about those that have gone before, and what are the worries and the anxieties that I hold on to? And I have all of these theological perspectives, and this one is going here and this one is going there. But what do I believe about him? That was central for the apostles in this resurrection experience, because he said, my friends, I'm sending you out to proclaim this. And maybe the most important piece in the gospel was peace. Peace be with you. It was very important to him because that was his greeting. Then he showed them his hands and his side. And then he repeats it immediately after doing that, peace be with you. He wanted them to have peace. He wanted us to have peace. And maybe the big question is, what is it that is disturbing your peace? What prevents you from receiving his peace right now? We say it. It flows off of our tongue in this celebration of the Eucharist. But how important it was to him and to the disciples. And the reason was essentially this, very simple. That we would rather trade knowledge for faith quite often. I would rather know what's coming on down the pike next so that I can be in control and I can take care of it all, rather than have faith in him. And he says to Thomas and to the rest of them and to us, hey, I got you covered. I promise you, I got you covered. Receive the peace.